Seren Petro, our friend from WHB. Mr. Petro, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, brother. How are you?
I'm doing great. Now, you know we like to have a little fun with you, right? And so let's get for you. Yeah. Let's get this started. We're not going to call you Darth Vader, but we used to call you Darth Vader. But do you have a return policy on a couple of these items? I don't know what you were trying to sell us there, Seren, but a couple of the items we might want to return. You ship us our Michael Porter Jr. We pay through the roof for him. Now he's having another back surgery. And this Bill of Good just sent us all this hope on Drew Lock, and he's no good. What are you doing? These Missouri products, they're all defective, Seren.
Yeah, listen, I mean, I don't know if you've chronicled how successful Missouri athletics is. I'm not sure why you're dabbling in that pool to begin with.
Right?
But, we did talk about it here when we saw Michael Porter Jr. was going to have the surgery, because that is like – and Missouri's really bad right now. But the Konzo Martin era kicked off with him putting together the number one recruiting class in the country, or maybe number two recruiting class in the country, when he got Michael Porter Jr. and his brother – who was a 6'11", top 25 player that then reclassified up into that class. Jeremiah Tillman, a 6'11 guy, they got away from Illinois. They got another kid away from Washington. It was this great class, and it looked like, boy, Mizzou was going to be a real player with the most talented players out there. And, of course, Michael Porter Jr. got injured in an exhibition game against Kansas and for Hurricane Relief, to raise money for Hurricane Relief, and never really played until the very end of the year. And then his brother blew out his knee the next year. The Porters really gave nothing to the university. And, of course, it was one of those hire dad and both the kids come type of things, because the dad was on the staff. So it never did play out, and it was so unfortunate. You thought, well, hey, this is great. Here's a kid who's finally overcome, a back injury, which was such a terrifying injury, and the Nuggets are going to be rewarded by taking that risk. And then to see him go under the knife again is really scary.
Yeah, I don't know if you – kind of followed what happened with him here, but we drafted him, and it was like, oh, well, they could get a steal because he fell to like 14, but he sat out an entire year. He has tremendous confidence, and people think he's cocky and this and that, but he was always, he sat out a year, and then he was always engaged in this battle with Coach Malone about, Coach Malone always wanted to teach him a lesson. Like, you got to play defense. Nobody plays defense, right? But it's like, so he's always constantly getting benched. They don't run things for him. So he's always like trying to make things happen. So because his first year that he played is essentially wasted because he's always getting quote taught a lesson. And then last year he played more, but in the playoffs it was, the same thing. And then he hurts his back. And, he gets paid, but then he hurts his back. It's like he's wasting, his career's, getting wasted, and maybe, hopefully he could come back to you because he's got $200 million deal now. But I don't know how you fall on things like that. Well, we got to teach these young kids a lesson. I mean, do you think that works in the NBA, Seren?
I don't. And I'll go back. Listen, I love the draft pick. Like, when you're the Denver Nuggets, and Denver's certainly a more cosmopolitan city than Kansas City, but I've seen, but it's a long way from being LA or New York, right?
Well, in the NBA, nobody wants to come here. It's a dead zone. Nobody wants to come.
Right. That's kind of what I was trying to get at politely. But you said it, so. We'll use your words, but I think when you're a team like that, when you're the Milwaukee Bucks as well, you've got to try to find the superstars, because superstars win. And when you can't sign them in free agency, that means you got to find them in the draft. Generally speaking, you can only get them at the very top of the draft, certainly if they're American. The other way is to try to be better in Europe, find European players that you can stash and then bring over at a later time. And of course the Nuggets hit with that with Jokic, and then it's take guys that have high risk. And that's what Michael Porter Jr. was. And so, it looked like the Nuggets had done exactly what you're supposed to do as a small market. Same way the Bucks had got it right with Giannis, with a pick that was a little bit later, because people didn't know as much about him as they would if he played all his games over here in the States. And they were reaping the rewards of having, high-end, max contract type talent that they were able to get in ways that are a lot more difficult than a team like the Lakers to get. So, yeah, I think it's sad. It's frustrating. I was thrilled to see Giannis stay in Milwaukee, because as a guy who lives in a small market, I'd like to see those small markets have the talent, be able to keep the talent they need. And it's just so disappointing to see it happen to a small market like the Nuggets.
Now, our other, running little joke that we rib you on was, we honestly thought, we had our next Brett Favre, with Drew Lock. And I brought you on prior to, early last season, and you're like, yeah, that's not who that guy is. And then it turned into, he's a turnover machine. And then we find out he's an absolute terrible leader. I don't know if you heard this, but they had this little scheme where they hid their COVID devices, planted them in the four corners of the room so they, I guess they could all sit together and play tickle fight while they watch film. So that was why they had to play a game without a quarterback last year.
Right.
And then he gets benched this year because he's no good, and probably partly because of that. He comes into a game and stinks it up, and then he's like, well, if I'd had reps, you know, maybe I'll play better next time. Like, he's terrible. What did you send our way? I mean, we're despondent.
You know, it's listen, you never know how a guy's going to, handle having, difficulties, hitting a ceiling at some point. Do you find a way to break through, or do you just, keep butting your head against it? And, he didn't have a great first year at Mizzou, but he was never going to lose his job. And so I don't know that he had to go dig in and find a way to overcome adversity there. The job was his. He did get better, to his credit. His third year at Missouri was really good. And, and then they changed coordinators and they played a little bit different style. So statistically speaking, he wasn't quite as strong as last year. But, he's a kid that has talent. There's no doubt that he has talent. But the NFL, so much of the NFL is not just about what you can do in a 7-on-7, right, or what you can do playing flag football. It's what can you do when the rush is on. And that's one of the reasons why, I think Patrick Mahomes, people question him, but he's had such success because he was under duress the whole time at Texas Tech. You got a pretty good look at what it was going to look like seeing an NFL pass rush. Every level you go to, the higher you go, the less time you have and the more difficult it is to complete those throws. So you get a better look at guys who have played in stressful situations to see what their, potential is as an NFL quarterback.
Yeah. All right. So I don't know how you guys, let me ask you this. How are you guys viewing this game coming up tomorrow?
There's a feeling that coming off the bye that the Chiefs were getting a lot of things together going into the bye. They've won four straight and that, Andy Reid in the bye week is better than anybody else. Not just in the game that comes after it, where I think he's only lost like three times. He's like, I had something like 14, 15 and three or something. I've lost track of it since he had only lost one in his whole time in Philadelphia. And so there's a feeling that they're going to win. There's not even a discussion, not even a thought that the Chiefs won't win. The question is, how much are they going to win by and how many games are they going to win, Sunday and after? Because it's a question of, is this team finished, 13-4, 12-5? I don't think anybody's got them losing more than one game after this. I think that's a little bit foolhardy. But there's a lot of things that are going well for the Chiefs. The defense, they've made a lot of changes as far as the personnel goes, bringing in a lot more of the youth and athleticism to the defense. Getting Melvin Ingram allowed him to put Chris Jones back at D tackle, and everything seems to be clicking on that side of the ball. So really most of the conversation has been about, is the offense going to get back to what it has been in the past and what needs to happen for the offense to get back to being what it's been in the past? Because the bigger question marks right now are on the offensive side of the ball.
Well, thank you for that. Harsh words, not a question, huh? No question they're going to win this game, Mr. Petro.
Well, that's the fans.
The feeling, yeah.
I'm aware it's the NFL, and I think one of the things I give Denver a better chance to win than I think most people in this town do, because Denver's got a really good defense, and it's an opportunistic defense. And the Chiefs, even in winning here of late, their biggest problem has been the turnovers. I mean, you can look at the stats, and usually Andy Reid's teams are top five in the plus-minus category, and they're way down towards the bottom, and they continue, even when they don't turn it over, to have what most of the analytics community would call turnover worthy plays. Tyreek Hill in the game against the Raiders had a fumble that bounced right back up to him like he was dribbling a basketball. He caught it on the run and kept going. They had two dropped interceptions against the Raiders. Now Patrick Mahomes has been a victim of six of his interceptions. They were balls that the analytics said 75% of the time would be caught by his own guy. Basically, they went through his own guy's hands. So, people have been on him about his INTs, which, by the way, he's 25-11 at a time that, Justin Herbert's now 24-10. But Mahomes is still the focal point because of it. But a lot of his interceptions weren't really his fault. And then the other side of the equation is that, guys are making other mistakes, fumbling the football. And they continue to do that against the Raiders. The Raiders just couldn't capitalize on it. Cowboys did, and that's what made that game kind of an ugly game where the Chiefs couldn't really get the offense going. They also missed a field goal, missed an extra point in that game as well. So they won against the Cowboys, but the offense was not very impressive again, and it's because they continued with a fumble from Patrick Mahomes, an interception that went off the hands of Travis Kelce, They continue to have those kind of plays, and I think that's what Denver's built to do, take advantage of those plays. We saw the pick six against the Chargers last week, and I think the Chiefs are, you know, they've been doing it all year with the ball bouncing off their hands and up in the air, and the Broncos will make them pay if they have that kind of game. So they need to be better. Like, I don't know how the bye is supposed to make guys catch a football better, right, or hold on to a football. You know, I get it. If you got a new scheme, you need to come up with a new offense, a new defense. Okay, I see you've got some extra time to work on that kind of stuff, but that hasn't been the Chiefs' problem. The Chiefs' problem has been holding on to the football, and I don't know where just taking 7 extra days is going to necessarily make that any better.
Well, I have some news for the Chiefs fans that think this is a foregone conclusion. We are viewing in this town the biggest game since Super Bowl 50, Mr. Petro. For us, you know, we have been going wall to wall. But we've also, on our station, just, you know, recounting all of the agonizing, painful, I think we did a vignette on, like, the most 11 agonizing defeats that the Chiefs have, you know, doled out to the Broncos since, because what's it been, 11 or 14 losses in a row? In a row, Mr. Petro, from the Broncos suffered at the hands of the Chiefs. We are amped up. We are ready to shock the world and take down the Kansas City Chiefs. For some reason, I think it's because, you know, nobody thought they could beat the Cowboys, and they stomped the Cowboys, and then nobody was really expecting them to beat the Chargers, even though the Chargers are like, we think they should be great because Herbert's playing great, but they were only 6-4 going into last week, and they just kept, you know, imploding last week, and so it's like, oh, they beat the Chargers, well, they're going to beat the Chiefs, and they could beat the Chiefs, and they'll be in the first place in the AFC West or whatever. So there's optimism here, misplaced or not, that they're going to go into Kansas City and beat the Chiefs, and things are going to be great here from now on.
You know, I don't think the optimism is misplaced, because there are really good football players on the Broncos team, and right, good players make good plays. So I think there's reasons to be optimistic. Now, to be confident that a win is coming, I think that would be a little bit misplaced. I get the move to get Teddy Bridgewater. I consider it a similar move to the Chiefs getting Alex Smith. I mean, you want a guy to manage the game, and quarterbacks always take that as an insult. I certainly don't mean it as an insult, because bad quarterbacks can't even manage the game. Managing the game is an important part of the equation. Great quarterbacks manage the game. They just also make great throws. And I think getting a guy that can manage the game and not blow it on the offensive side of the ball is smart football. It's what the Chiefs did with Andy Reid. It's the first thing he did, was to go get Alex Smith and bring him in and stabilize things. And the Chiefs had good teams and eventually won a division title with Alex Smith. They didn't beat Peyton Manning, right? They weren't going to be able to do that. That's the next step. But, you know, if you've got, like, you know, Joe Flacco won a Super Bowl, right? That happened. Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl. If you can build a lights-out defense and have a guy manage the game on offense, you can win a championship. But it's really hard to get a wrecking crew defense of 11 guys all the way to a Super Bowl healthy. And usually you just can't play that lights out defense, you know, for 20 games over the course of an NFL season. So, look, what they're doing, I think, is smart. You know, everyone bombed them for not taking Justin Fields. The reality is maybe they should have taken Mac Jones the way it looks like right now in New England. But if you don't have a conviction to a quarterback, then not taking that guy and just moving on to a veteran to stabilize the situation, I don't think is you know, a bad idea. At some point, you got to swing for the fences and try to get the franchise quarterback. And nobody knows that better than the Broncos and Packers, probably, with Favre and Rodgers and Elway and Peyton Manning in, you know, semi-close proximity. You know, those franchises know how important it is to get those guys. But, you know, everyone thought Justin Fields was supposed to be the pick to take, and he's been a disaster in Chicago. So, you know, right now the Broncos are playing, like you said, a really important game that has the fan base fired up, interested, still spending money on the team, and that's part of the process towards building a championship team. The Chiefs didn't bottom out to be in the worst. You know, it wasn't a tank job to get to Patrick Mahomes. They were picking 27th. They saw a guy, they had a conviction, and they did whatever it took to go up and get him. But if you don't have that conviction in a young quarterback, I don't think it's a bad idea to try to stabilize the position with a solid veteran.
Hey, by the way, what are they – so I didn't even realize this till I heard it this week. What's going on? Did you guys rename Arrowhead, or are they calling it Arrowhead Agiha, or what's going on there?
Yeah, so, you know, they wanted to get some money coming in, right?
Sure.
There's no money in the NFL till now. So, but Lamar Hunt was always, he liked the name Arrowhead Stadium, and he would never consider selling the naming rights of the stadium because he wanted it to be called Arrowhead Stadium. The family, you know, led by Clark Hunt, who's the one who who heads up things. He's the guy in charge, even though it's him and four other siblings that all own the team equally. But they were looking, okay, hey, dad's gone. Now we'll listen to what it is. But they wanted to keep the name on the stadium. So now it's technically GEHA Field at Arrowhead Stadium. And the GEHA, which I also refer to as GEHA, which they don't like. They want you to say GEHA, to which I told my friends at the Chiefs, well, when I get a check,
right,
I'll say it the way you want it. Till then, it's GEHA. Tell them to get a different name if they don't like what it is. But it's a government supplement insurance company or something. I'm not sure, that's based here in Kansas City, that wanted to get their name on the field. And I don't think it's taken off quite the way they would like it to. Everyone still refers to it, obviously, as Arrowhead Stadium.
You know what's interesting? I mean, one of the reasons the Broncos is going to blow up some the price of the, in my opinion, they're going to be sold here shortly. They're ripe to have a new stadium complex somewhere here in Colorado, because they're like the Chiefs. The stadium is not really located in an ideal place. I heard something about you guys having discussions. Obviously, I live there right in the Overland Park area. I lived in Olathe. I've been to the stadium. It's cool history, things like that. It's not the nicest place. You guys need a new complex and stuff like that. What's going on with the latest with that?
Well, I mean, the feeling is, just to be clear, that people like the stadiums, right? And there are some people that like where they're at as well. But the concept of generating revenue around the stadiums is an impossibility. You know, they've got a huge plot of land. In fact, the land that the Truman Sports Complex with the Royals and Chiefs sits on is actually bigger than the downtown loop. So it's a massive amount of property, but there's just no real ability to develop it. You know, the great news is the access highway-wise is very good. It's surrounded on three sides by highways, which makes it easier to get people in and out of the structure, but it also makes it virtually impossible to have any kind of development around it. And we know that's the new revenue generator, is not only do you pay for the stadiums for the teams, but you also give them the surrounding land so that they can then own every business that, you know, can benefit from having events at big locations like that. Now, that's what the Warriors did. You know, the money is not really in what the Warriors arena is going to bring them, which is a lot. It's they own everything around it and are generating revenue off that as well. And there's no real possibility to do that here. There's plenty of land for it. There's just no way really to get any kind of, you know, regular traffic in there if it's not a game day. So the Royals are looking, they announced this year, and everyone knew this, that the new ownership is looking at moving the team downtown. They want a new downtown stadium and to get into an area where they can have, you know, more development going on around it. And the Royals and Chiefs are tied at the hip with the same lease, and equal lease. Every dollar the Royals get, the Chiefs have to get, and vice versa. And so the Royals basically announced, hey, we're looking at moving away from that. The Chiefs, Clark Hunt, was finally in town and addressed the situation several months after the Royals had made their announcement. He was in front of the media and everybody asked. And he said, well, yes, we're aware of it. The Royals did let us know that they were going to announce this. And you know, probably next year we'll start looking at what we're going to do. I think their play is to wait and see where the Royals go. And then can they have all of the land that's there all for themselves?
Yeah.
And I think there's a feeling that out at the racetrack and where the soccer team, we're Sporting Kansas City's, you know, where the NASCAR track and where Sporting Kansas City's home is, that area would be in play for an Arrowhead or a Royals if downtown Kansas City doesn't do it. I've been told that they don't think there's any way that the state of Missouri will lose a second football team, that when the Rams left, the state of Missouri will do whatever it takes to keep the Chiefs in Missouri, and certainly that would be in Kansas City. And I think by all accounts, the best spot is probably where they are. So probably what happens is the Royals leave and the Chiefs build a new stadium and a new practice facility at that current site.
Does Clark Hunt not live in Kansas City? You said something like he was finally in town.
Yeah, no, he lives in Dallas.
What?
Lamar Hunt Jr. lives in Kansas City. Lamar Sr. and Clark as well, he's always lived in Dallas. In fact, he and Jerry Jones have a little cup that they trade. They live in roughly in a nearby neighborhood, near proximity to each other in Dallas. And so whenever those teams play every 4 years, they have a little cup that they trade back and forth between the two of them. It was started out as kind of like a little joke amongst Dallas neighbors when Lamar was alive. And now, you know, it's become a little bit more publicized and everything. But no, Clark lives in Dallas, flies in on game days and everything. And you know, he, like I said, there's family that's here. Lamar Hunt Jr. Lives here. And I think maybe one of his, maybe a sister.
But so the owner of the Chiefs doesn't live in Kansas City or even in
the guy
state.
Who calls the shots. Yeah, the guy who calls the shot lives in Dallas.
Wow, amazing.
And always has.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Well, and the guy that used to own the Chiefs lived in Bentonville, didn't he? Chiefs, the Royals. I mean, the Royals.
Yes, yeah. Now, John Sherman lives here in Kansas City, the new owner, but yes. And there was even talk when the Royals were run by a trust for a while before ultimately David Glass, bought the team. But there was a provision in there that whoever bought the team had to live in Kansas City. So David Glass was allegedly buying a condo on the plaza. That actually never came to fruition. But, you know, when you're on the committee that's running the Royals and then you're going to buy them, I guess you can get around some of those things.
Well, what Kroenke did was he had a suite built into the Pepsi Center, and then it wasn't big enough, so then he had the media box cut in half so he had more or whatever. I think it was so he could have an elevator or something so he didn't have to land his helicopter. I can't remember what it was.
Well, Clark Hunt, the owner's suite also has an apartment within it at Arrowhead as well. So when he's in town, generally speaking, he is living at the stadium.
I know, Mr. Kroenke's very popular in Missouri where you reside. Or you don't reside. You reside in Kansas, right?
I can see Missouri from where I'm sitting right now, but I am on the Kansas side.
Yes, there you go. Well, we all of us good fellers lived in Johnson County. That's how that went.
Yeah.
Yes. All right, Sir Seren Petra from WHB, we appreciate your time so much.